Welcome to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. The Legacy and Faith Show is about the journey of discovering how to create plans that protect wealth and family values for generations. And now the host of the Legacy and Faith Show, Paul Grant.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, it's another edition of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant. Hi there, Paul.
Hello.
Hey, continuing our discussion of foundational issues, foundational questions in creating that estate plan, that trust in particular. We've
right.
gotten a little bit in the weeds last week, but I think a really valuable discussion on how IRAs are handled using the trust. And you want to continue with some of that and how to handle those beneficiaries with the trust.
Yeah, that's right. So really what this whole series has been about is, if you were to walk into my office, what type of questions and issues do we need to address to make a really good estate plan for you? And we've taken the approach of, we're going to be using a revocable living trust. It keeps you in full power and control during your lifetime. It gives really good instructions on how to care for you. That was much earlier in this entire series. You can head over to legacyandfaith.com and find all of our past podcasts for this entire series. And now we're at the stage, or the place, to where a client passes away. And what do we do when someone dies? And last week we talked about IRAs, and we talked about what happens to those. We've talked about other issues of what does it mean to go through a probate versus not go through a probate. We found out that, unfortunately, trusts can still go through a probate because they're not properly done and the assets are not in the trust appropriately.
That's a shame, because that's why you do trust.
That is one of the reasons that you do it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and you've seen this happen personally. And so, and unfortunately, I've seen it multiple times when people come to the office off the streets. And it's a real shock, but we have this trust. Yes, well, we had to open up a probate. And so typically that means that we didn't do a full job with the trust. And I don't believe that that's a client issue. I believe that that really is a foundational principle of finding the right person to make sure that your estate plan is going to be well developed, that it is going to have the proper legal necessities. We talked a lot last week about having the proper tax language, both income tax benefits, estate tax benefits, and IRA tax benefits. All of those need to be included in a really strong trust, so that we can get to the right conclusion with every asset that's there. But if you don't have assets in the trust, then the instructions don't attach, and we've got a problem. Mm. That is a risk that we may be marching down the road towards a probate. Exactly what you said, Mark. That interrupts what we thought we were going to get.
Yeah.
So this week, we're going to kind of continue the discussion on what happens in a trust when someone passes away. And what does the trustee do? And if we are married, how does that influence a surviving spouse? So we've talked about IRAs, and now we're going to take our next step in the journey of what happens when someone passes away, and what does a good trust instruction look like?
Okay, well, we need to look at that. And the first thing is that spouse. First question I'd ask is, can a spouse change the trust? What can they do to mess with the trust?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so,
because I've seen that they do.
Yeah, that's right. And so there is one of two ways to go about this, which is you leave all power and control to a spouse, or you limit their power and control. Mm-hmm. So let's talk that out. Many of the templated trusts that I see do not give any inroads to a surviving spouse. But here's the inroad. When my spouse dies, because I wasn't in contact with my attorney, because they didn't have some type of a relationship program or way to stay in touch with me, and attorneys usually don't. They're one and done. They give you a document and here you go. Call me if you need me mentality. That's not my system. We have a relationship program to where we stay involved in our clients' lives. We watch over their estate plan. We make sure their assets are all in their trust properly, and that the estate is going to work. And we develop a deeper relationship. So, however, the common way of doing estate plan is once you get your trust, you're done. And so someone passes away and the surviving spouse is now grieving. And the last thing that they want to do is go sit down and talk to an attorney. And as a matter of fact, they usually see that they still have all the assets under their control. An IRA probably had the spouse as a beneficiary instead of the trust. We talked about that last week. And so all of a sudden, all the assets land in the hands of the surviving spouse. And it appears to the surviving spouse that, well, this worked flawlessly. I don't have to do anything other than we missed critical and important steps of actually protecting the estate from estate taxes because we didn't get back to the attorney to make sure that we close the trust properly. So in most trusts, one of the reasons that you utilize a trust could be for estate tax purposes. So what happens is in a trust, a standard language is that you create what is called an AB trust, a bypass trust, a safe harbor trust, a marital trust, a family trust. All of these things are exactly the same thing. We just put different bows on it to sound really cool and smart, but they're all the same thing. What happens is we split the assets because of living in a community property state. If I were to die, I can direct half of the community, my portion, to how I want it to go. So in a trust, I would say, I want to start now an irrevocable trust because I've died and I can't sign my name anymore. I want to start a trust and I want to make sure that my wife, my spouse, is the beneficiary. I want her to be able to live a life that is financially good and that she is well taken care of. I say that my trust should say, baby, I love you so much, you can use whatever is in my trust. I'm still waiting for the client who will call me to say, you can put that language in my trust. So in essence, a bunch of legal language, but that's the end result, is we have now two trusts. The surviving spouse has her portion, and my portion is segregated for her benefit and for her use. So in other words, we haven't taken anything from a surviving spouse, but rather we have preserved what's in the estate so that we can make sure we don't have a bad tax consequence when my wife dies. So if I just gave everything to my spouse, and if I was at an estate tax threshold, which in Washington state is a little bit over $2 million. So if you're anywhere near that amount as a married couple, man, most houses nowadays are at $750 to $1 million. So just your house alone, you're most of the way there. If you're anywhere near that, you need to start considering whether a trust instrument is a better instrument. Why? Because it's going to protect the estate. If I give everything to my spouse and then she dies and she passes away with more than $2 million, well, now we're paying an unnecessary estate tax in Washington, and my girls or the charities or whoever else I have as beneficiaries are not getting as much. So one of the reasons we use a revocable living trust, to plan for taxes, to plan for estate taxes. So when we separate it properly, then my portion is under $2 million and my wife's portion is under $2 million. If it's over that, we have other ways to assist and mitigate or even sometimes fully eliminate an estate tax. But the base revocable living trust, almost all of them will do this one tax trick, which is split the assets. And now I have a his and her trust. When we pass away, my wife can benefit from using everything in the estate, but we're preserving it to ensure that there's no unnecessary estate tax. Okay, that's the foundation, most basic tax structure in almost every trust I've ever seen. They do that. But again, if you don't have all of your assets in the name of the trust or pointing to the trust, then that language is not going to capture every asset. And once I've passed away, if we don't close the estate right, after a period of time, I've had this numerous times. My spouse died 5, 6 plus years ago. can I do that now? And boy, I tell you, I start squirming inside. Because we didn't take care of it when the incident occurred. That's when you need to get to an attorney to make sure, what does the estate plan do? I have not lost a spouse. I've watched many people walk through that journey in my practice. So this I can tell you, it's no fun. And it's hard, but it's necessary work to get to your attorney, whoever created your plan, get back to them if your spouse passes away so that the plan can be implemented right. We're trying to protect the estate by doing good estate planning. But if you don't do it, then it may appear from the surviving spouse's perspective that everything worked flawlessly. I've got control of everything in the trust. But we never took that step of actually dividing things and creating the protections it's supposed to create. When that happens, Mark, that's when someone has full authority because they never did anything. So they have taken full control over all of the assets. Now they're starting to leave things to a second spouse, to a caretaker. They're starting to give money away.
That's a scenario I have experienced personally. And by extension, I wanted to move into, what about the beneficiaries' considerations in the trust? The spouse has passed away. Now the surviving spouse has all the control. And unbeknownst to everybody, including the one who passed away, they have a very different philosophy as to who should get what.
Yeah.
And they want to change it all. And maybe the spouse who passed away was really the one who made all the money during their marriage.
Yeah, and maybe managed all the finances too, right? Is that, I don't know, what I've seen is that in most households, there's one person who does the finances. They're just, they have a different skill set. It doesn't make them better or worse. It just simply that they manage the money. And so then that person passes away and
In the scenario I had, they weren't the person who managed the money, but they were the person who made all the money
and then handed off the
caretaking of
right.
it to the one who survived.
Yeah.
Right.
And, yes. And so when an estate is not closed properly, and that's really where we're at in the story, is that someone has passed away and we have to close an estate properly, then all of that is at risk. The planning is at risk. And if we don't have a relationship, I'm saying that if an attorney does not have a relationship with his client and the client back to the attorney, there is a wide open door that the plan may not work as designed. Why? Because you did this planning 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago. Heck, the attorney that helped you probably isn't even there anymore. And so without a relationship, without checking in, and I would ask, how many times has your attorney ever called you? Well, I communicate with my clients every year, all the time. They would probably even say, yes, you tell us too much, Paul. Is your attorney ever communicating with you? And if the answer is no, then your estate is potentially at risk, because it's no fun in the grieving process to go through closing an estate. But yet, that's why you did the work. But yet, yeah. You don't know what the future holds, and the unforeseen circumstances that now the entire estate is in the hands of the surviving spouse, who may not have the same skill set as the one who passed away.
Or objectives.
Objectives, the purposes, the intent, and the list goes on. So therefore, we develop good plans because we want them to be enacted, but there's always places to where there's a danger that it may not actually happen. You got to have a good relationship, ongoing relationship with your estate planner. If you don't have one, let me know, because that is our entire system. I believe we're one of the only estate planning firms that has a really mature relationship program so that we can make the client's objectives really happen. That's the goal.
Okay, you're intrigued by Paul's approach to trusts and estate planning. You want to find out more about his services? How do people get in touch with you, Paul?
Head over to our website, legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us, all found at legacyandfaith.com.
Back with more of the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant in just a moment.
Can I avoid probate? Will I lose everything if my health becomes compromised? How do I preserve what I have for me and my family? Will the government take it all? This is Paul Grant with the Legacy and Faith Show. These are some of the most common questions we get on a daily basis, and there are solutions for all of these issues. It is time for you to protect your family and what God has placed under your stewardship, and we can help. Go to legacyandfaith.com to find out more about our services and upcoming educational opportunities. That's Legacy and Faith.
Your photos, slides, scrapbooks, and home movies are invaluable and irreplaceable. Barry Kenny here with the Bear Services. Call us to save them as digital files to be stored electronically and shared liberally. We will even come to you so they stay in your possession. Go to thebearservices.com for more information. That's thebearservices.com.
We now return to the Legacy and Faith Show, featuring estate and tax attorney Paul Grant. And continue today's practical discussion to apply biblical principles for kingdom purposes.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, talking about foundational questions and issues to address with an effective trust. And Paul was talking about how the surviving spouse can change things or not change things if the trust was set up properly. I experienced where it was not set up properly,
right,
where the spouse who passed, her wishes were not followed.
Yeah.
Because the surviving spouse had better ideas.
Right.
And but there are ways with that trust done correctly where that could have been avoided.
Yeah, so let's take a look at, well, okay, fine. So with that we see a potential weakness in closing an estate with a surviving spouse, specifically without relationship in the ongoing relationship with a law firm. So now what happens if it's done well? What should it look like? Well, in a general broad stroke discussion, that second trust should have been opened up, right? So the decedent's portion of the community property and any separate property that they may own should have been put into an irrevocable trust. Why irrevocable? Because I've died in the story and I can no longer sign my name. So therefore, I can't change the instructions. The instructions have become fixed and permanent. Well, there are opportunities to allow a surviving spouse to come back into my plan and make fine-tune adjustments. So there are legal, proper ways to give my surviving spouse the opportunity to make these fine-tune adjustments. Now, there's one of two things that we need to look at. First of all, what if the law changes or a tax changed, and now the language in my trust, because now I've been dead for X long, and the law keeps changing, right? Taxes keep changing. Well, there's a thing called a trust protector, and that should be in every plan. And what it does is it allows the successor trustee, the one who is going to be managing my portion of the estate, typically my surviving spouse, specifically in first marriages, they can invest the money and make sure that it's being properly dealt with. So my surviving spouse could likewise call in a trust protector. It's an attorney that can go back into the trust and fix, based upon the rules that are given in the trust protector, fix a legal or tax issue. But they can't, the attorney cannot change how I've left money to my kids. They can't change who the beneficiaries are. They can only come back in and make sure that the trust is running effectively and efficiently. Because if we make a trust and it's going to last much longer than me, I want to make sure that it's not being caught with really bad language, with 10 and 15, 20-year-old language. As a matter of fact, most trusts that are inherited that do have stronger boundaries, it used to be a thing in the 90s to give the spouse or to give other people the income of the trust and then hold and preserve the principal so it goes to the grandkids type of idea. That doesn't happen quite as much anymore, but that we can do anything you want. But those trusts have been pulled forward then. They're still in existence, and the tax language is really bad. But there's no way other than reforming the trust or taking a long legal process of going back in to change the tax and legal language. So what we do nowadays is we add in what's called a trust protector so we can change the legal and tax issues. So with that, every well-designed trust should have a trust protector. It should have an inroad to ensure that the trust is going to operate effectively and efficiently, both in a legal and tax perspective. All right. And typically, we want attorneys making those fine-tune adjustments, so therefore, an attorney can go back in. But again, it only happens with the successor trustee's permission. So there's no legal authority given carte blanche to anybody. It all rests within the successor trustee. Now, there's another thing that we can do in trust as we think through what options do we have nowadays that we used to not have. Really, even 10 to 20 years ago, how we develop trust right now is so radically different in the past 10 to 15 years. If your trust is anywhere near that age, you got to get it reviewed. It's missing so many really amazing things that the industry has changed as a whole over the years, such as a trust protector usually. So you should really have your estate plan reviewed every 3 to 5 years minimally if you are not in some sort of an ongoing relationship with your attorney. So now I've passed away in the story. I've started my trust, and it says an attorney can come back in and fix the legal and tax. But what about if something happens to one of my kids? What if one of my kids takes a turn for the worse? Okay. What if one of my kids takes a turn for the better? And I put in a bunch of rules because they were knuckleheads. And I put in all these rules, and they finally had the come to Jesus moment that we've been praying for. And they turn their life around and they genuinely do it. And now I've encumbered everything that they're supposed to get. And now my surviving spouse is looking at all this saying, if Paul was here, because I was married to him for 30, 40, 50 years, if Paul was here, this is not what he would want. Okay, so typically in first marriages, not always, but we can leave a string that, for lack of better terminology, the technical term is called a power of appointment. We can leave a power to my spouse to make some fine-tune adjustments. So the question I ask my clients is, do you want maybe something similar, Mark, to what you are explaining, which is, do you want to leave your surviving spouse all absolute power? So that means if my kids are doing great during my lifetime and then one of them becomes the knucklehead, or God forbid, they develop a drug and alcohol issue, or they disassociate from the family, right? These things happen, unfortunately.
They got in trouble with the IRS and don't want to pay off their IRS bill.
I don't know what the scenario is, but it became bad. All power to my spouse would allow her to disinherit one of the kids, completely remove them out of my plan. Well, maybe I don't like that. Maybe I said, I don't care what they ever do. They're still my kids, and they're going to get a portion of what I have. So then I can leave a power to my spouse that says, but you can change how they get the money. So you can put some boundaries around it if something went bad in their life. Or if I put boundaries there because they were knuckleheads and now they're doing great, you can take those boundaries off and make it a more free-flowing trust. So we can add things that help guide a beneficiary to better financial success, or we can really let them have unlimited accessibility to their inheritance. Those are more specific questions. Actually, we're going to get into that in the coming weeks. But the question posed is, how much power can my spouse have? It depends on what you want the surviving spouse to have. But if we don't ask the question, which most trusts don't have this language in it that I review, then I can never have that inroad back to allow the surviving spouse, if appropriate. Now, it may not be appropriate in second marriages, specifically when we have his and her kids and things. So I would leave my spouse the ability to change maybe her children's instructions, but not mine. And so so that's a whole different discussion.
Yeah, there's lots of combinations.
What inroads do we have? There are options, but we got to ask the deep questions to get to the right conclusion so that we can develop a plan that is going to be sustainable over time and accomplish your goals.
I want to find out the spouse who passed away first, maybe the last few years of their life, they had Alzheimer's or were incapacitated in some way that way. So they couldn't track with any of these changes or let their wishes known. So there's some real complications there. So important to ask these foundational questions when designing an effective trust. You like Paul's approach to this subject and want to find out more about his services. How did they do that, Paul?
Well, head over to legacyandfaith.com. There's past podcasts, upcoming educational opportunities, ways to communicate with us. We got to get a plan that is detailed for you and your family so that it can accomplish your vision, your purposes, your goals. It can all be found at legacyandfaith.com.
It's the Legacy and Faith Show with Paul Grant.
Thank you for joining us for the Legacy and Faith Show. You can find more information about the show and Paul Grant at legacyandfaith.com. Join us next week at the same time as we learn to build God's kingdom and continue our journey on how to protect wealth and family values for generations. All discussions on the Legacy and Faith Show are intended to be about general legal issues. If a situation applies to you, then we encourage you to seek specific legal advice. Please do not rely upon any discussions from this program in place of having a personal relationship with your attorney. Any listener question that may have been answered also does not constitute legal advice and does not establish a client-attorney relationship.